What's up, fools? This is the QTR Podcast. Today is January 9th, 2019, and got a good one in store for you today. The one, the only, Montana Skeptic, back in the house, back on the line. But before we get into it, real quick, and I'll be brief today, let's set up the rules of the road for new listeners. Number one, I do encourage a two-drink minimum for this podcast. Number two, this is not investment advice. I am not an investment advisor. Do your research elsewhere, ladies and gentlemen. That's all I gotta say. Do not rely on this podcast for any type of financial advice at all. Don't make any decisions based on it. This is purely for journalistic and opinion purposes alone. And it's a little cathartic for me too, and it's cheaper than therapy, all right? Thank you very much, folks. That's number two. Number three, my podcast is brought to you by my patrons. My patrons are people that sign up through Patreon, and trust me, this podcast does not happen without the support of my patrons. So I appreciate the shit out of you guys. And just so you know, Matt Clyatt is a patron of mine whose name I've been saying wrong for apparently like 6 months, so much so that he sent me a big long email this morning about how to properly say his name. So there's your name right, Matt. So it's a good day for you and your family. Congratulations. I also want to shout out some of my other patrons that make the world go round here for me. First and foremost, the fine folks over at Quantamize.com, Quantamize. The folks at Quantamize have a groundbreaking AI platform that incorporates quantitative analysis for the regular average retail investor, covers over 10,000 stocks, it covers options and cryptos, and there's a free trial link to Quantamize right in my podcast description, so you can check that out anytime you want. Also want to shout out Scott Corsi. He is the author of Debt Slave Economics, link also in my profile. Also has been coming through huge as a patron. Today I'm going to shout out Chris Bede, Ken R., Russ Valenti, Andre Gagnon, Michael Samuels, Matt Merle. You guys, I appreciate the shit out of you people. Jesse Collins, John Pollard, Nick Zizis, Robert Mizello, what's going on? The folks at FlowAlgo.com are in the house, ladies and gentlemen. And just a couple of new patrons just stepping in, just testing the waters. My fine folks over at the Tesla Q podcast. I didn't even know that was a thing. So apparently I've got competition now. So thank you and fuck you. Marco Vitti, Jurabilis, Michael Han is in the house. Edward R. Delorme is down for the ride. What's up, brother? Lloyd Waldo, Taylor Duran, the folks at Rideshare Consultants NZ. I don't know what you guys are doing, but I'm sure I support it. I think that's New Zealand. You got to have me down there for some drinks at some point, gentlemen. Chris Bunting, this guy has his name as Elon Musk. I don't think it's the real Elon Musk. George Noble, Kevin McAllister, Chris Hicks, my buddy Gains on Gains, Stephen Kirk, William Diorio. Appreciate you guys very much, but I don't want to spend too much time on the patrons today because I got some real motherfucking content coming at you. My brother, the man, the one, the only, is in the house. I'm going to get him on the line right now. All right, arguably the most well-known Tesla short seller out there, and I'm sure he may object to me calling him legendary, but I think to some people he has already achieved legendary status. I have the one, the only Montana Skeptic on the line. What's going on, sir?
Well, first of all, congratulations to your Eagles, huh?
Oh, yeah, hell yeah. That's a great way to start.
I'm worried about Mike Ditka's heart condition after that performance.
Well, listen, that was we went nuts. When he missed that field goal, the place went apeshit. The city went apeshit.
Yeah, well, I feel badly for all the great Bears fans, but I know it was a great moment for you, so congrats.
Well, there's a counterparty to every trade. You know what I mean, my friend?
Exactly.
That's a great way to look at it.
So fire away.
All right. Well, first off, thanks for coming back on. I thought a good place to start today would be that you were recently, and I don't know if a lot of people know this, but you recently did the Robinhood Investor Conference, and you were part of a panel that was a debate. It was you and Gordon Johnson on the bear side, and on the bull side was Trip Chowdhury and Kathy Wood. Kathy Wood's famously the one with the $4,000 price target, and Trip Chowdhury is, in my opinion, completely off the reservation, but he's from Global Equities. And so I thought I'd open up by asking about that, because I don't think everybody has seen that. Certainly everybody wasn't there, so how did that go?
Well, it was a lot of fun. That happened, I think, on October 30. And Robin Hood Foundation is just a terrific organization in New York, and they do magnificent work with all kinds of work, helping lift people out of poverty in ways that really count. And so I was happy to do it. It was a charity event. They have a two-day event. They charge people a lot of money to go to it, but I was invited to be on this debate panel. So I need to thank Elon Musk for that. You said, I'm a legend. I'm a legend only thanks to Elon Musk. I was really a nobody before Elon Musk, and he decided to go after me for whatever reason in a really weird, twisted way. And I think that's how I came to the attention of the people at Robin Hood. So when they put the debate panel together, my name came up, and they asked me to come. And because it's a terrific charity event, I agreed to. And it's something different from what they usually do in this two-day conference, which mostly featured just brilliant, terrific financial people presenting their financial thesis in a really pithy, concentrated way. And it was a great experience for me to sit there and listen to some of these people who were legends, real legends. And so I was happy to be on the panel. It was fun. The format was a little awkward. We had very little time, actually. I think it was a 45-minute debate with four of us and a moderator. So there wasn't a lot of time to make detailed points. But it was fun. And I was really glad to go and glad to participate.
Yeah. So I guess one of the first things I want to ask you about it, you know, for those that didn't get to see it and those that weren't there, and I know, you know, I guess now it's 2 months old, but what were some of the points that you brought up and what did you get into while you were there?
Yeah, well, I said, you know, we got to make an opening, and I said, well, let's pretend that Tesla is actually an automobile company instead of something else. And it had just published its Q3 earnings, which were $312 million of GAAP earnings. And I said, okay, so that works out to a PE ratio of about 50, and the other auto companies trade between 6 and 8. So can Tesla do something to increase its earnings and grow into that, you know,
valuation?
Hyper valuation. Yeah,
right.
Exactly. And I said, I don't think it can, because it had just had this great quarter, but it did so by harvesting 2 years of Model 3 backlog and by selling, you know, the very highest ASP Model 3s. And at the time that we had this debate, it had just announced it was cutting prices on the performance version. It's cut them again since then, as you know. And I mentioned that it is slow to get its cars to Europe. This was back in October, right? But it was evident even then that the car had not been homologated yet, and that Tesla was going to miss out on deliveries in January and February in Europe at a time when in the United States demand was going to be, you know, diminished because of the slicing in half of the federal income tax credit. And I said, The biggest problem they have is that they've spent virtually nothing on growth CapEx. They have the Model S, which is long in the tooth. They have the Model X, which has never made money. Both of those cars are going to be hammered really badly. They already are being hammered as the Jaguar and the Audi arrive in Europe, and it's going to get worse as the Mercedes and the Porsche and others make the scene at the high end, and the Hyundai Kona at the low end, and now we have the new Nissan Leaf. And, you know, with Tesla having nothing in the pipeline until the Model Y, that's a huge problem for this company. And I addressed the point that Cathie Wood made about how Tesla's has such a brilliant lead in autonomous driving, simply pointing to the Navigant research, which is the most detailed research done by any independent agency into this, which said, you know, actually nobody's way ahead in autonomous driving. And if you want to rank the 19 people who are serious participants, Tesla comes in number 19. So,
but they're the only company that's probably taken deposits from people assuring them that there's going to be autonomous, fully self-driving, right?
Yeah, that's amazing, isn't it? Tesla has collected money for full self-driving. It's promised the cars will be capable of it. And just this week at the Consumer Electronic Confab in Las Vegas, the people who are serious about autonomous driving say, you know what, level four is years away, and it will have to be accomplished with geofencing in limited areas. And level five, I mean, that's just pie in the sky at this point. The idea that Tesla will ever have full self-driving in any of those cars now on the road is nonsense. And just another example of Elon Musk, you know, making promises that he is going to be unable to deliver on.
Even one of the Tesla blogs had an article out. I think it was either last night or this morning. I didn't read it at length, but one of the Tesla blogs had an article out that, you know, the company, I guess, is telling customers, or maybe it was prospective customers, it's going to be a very long time before you can use full self-driving, which is, it's fascinating considering, you know, it's been, what, a year and a half or 3 years, or I don't know how long it's been, but they've been taking deposits from people under the assumption that they're going to have vehicles that are driving themselves, which is just, yeah, it's not going to happen.
Yeah, by the way, you know, the Cathie Wood with her $4,000 price target, it was, you know, it was based on this imaginary product of autonomous driving, you know, in an imaginary market with imaginary margins. So her imagination failed her only when it came to imagining any competition. But she believes it completely, totally, despite the fact that, as we see, it's just not going to happen. And in fact, if anything, it's a liability for Tesla now that it's made this promise and collected the money.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Did anybody confront her about that at the debate? I mean, her astronomical price target, or the fact that, like you said, taking the money up front, not delivering the product, is a huge liability, right?
Yeah, there was a great moment actually in the debate where the moderator, who was a terrific guy, John Griffin, said to everybody, hey, what would make you change your mind? Is there anything that could happen that could make you change your mind? And you would say, you know what, I was wrong about my Tesla thesis. And he asked me first, and I said, yeah, if Tesla had a gap profit for four straight quarters, then I would have to say, you know what, I was wrong. I didn't think they could do that. I didn't think it could be a sustainably profitable company.
The key word there is gap, right?
Pardon me?
So the key qualifier there is gap.
Yeah, right. Well, yes. I mean, you know, we have to have a standard.
Yeah, but I mean, nowadays you have to say that because there is no standard anymore.
Yeah, right. It's there are all the social adjustments everyone wants to make. So he asked Cathie Wood and Tripp the same question, and both of that, Cathie said, no, there's nothing that could ever make me change my mind. Nothing, because actually I have stress tested this with my research people, and we are convinced that we are absolutely right, and we can't be wrong. So no, I'll never change my mind. Which is an amazing thing for a portfolio manager to say, I thought.
Well, it's certainly exactly what you want to hear from a counterparty, number one. But number two, you know, what about egregious accounting fraud? You know, like, would that make you change your mind?
No, Tesla's incapable of fraud because it's led by a great religious leader who has no moral shortcomings. And Tripp, you know, felt the same way. Tesla is the next Apple. There's no way it cannot be the next Apple. I think he's revised that since then and now has said, well, Apple's not Apple anymore, so only Tesla is left as the, you know, Apple analog. But no, nothing was ever going to make them change their mind. So I thought that was interesting.
So what do you think just to kind of move ahead a little bit to current events, what do you think that the picture looks like right now for demand in the U.S., which I think is probably the argument right at the center of the thesis right now that anybody's going to want to discuss on either side of the trade?
Yeah. No, I don't think that Tesla's going to want to discuss it. I think Tesla's going to say in Q1, yeah, our deliveries are down and our revenues are down, but deliveries don't equal demand. You know, it's because all those cars were on the boat to Europe or to China, and just you wait, we're going to have lots of demand over there. That's the story from Tesla, because they're going to be faced with for the first time, a delivery number that's lower. And they're going to be faced, I think, with revenues that are lower. I'm talking about in Q1. Right now, in the U.S., I mean, the U.S. is a really good measure of what is actually the organic demand. Now that the backlog is gone, how many cars can Tesla sell, even with this $3,750 tax credit? How many can they sell? And I think you're probably looking at maybe 20,000, maybe, probably that's a reach. So the question is, how about the EU? Well, they're going to miss out on all the January deliveries. We know that. Will the cars start to be delivered there in February, perhaps in late February? So they'll have a full month and maybe a little bit more of European deliveries. So there's no confirmation yet that the car is homologated, right? So you know, there are people who follow this and track it, and they claim that the orders in Europe right now, this is after Tesla invited all the reservation holders to go ahead and order. They got something like 14,000 orders. So then they opened it up to everybody, whether you had a reservation or not. And even opening it up to everybody, which they had to do like a month after they opened it up to the reservation holders, which is an ominous sign, they're probably somewhere around 16,000 orders right now. Maybe you're going to have a first full quarter of European demand of 30 to 35,000, and that's going to drop off sharply. And I just don't see any way Tesla can deliver more than, say, 80,000 cars, Model 3 cars, a year in Europe. And, you know, in China, they have still the 15% tariff to deal with. And there's a possibility that gets increased at the end of February, but let's say it stays at 15%. You know, maybe 25,000 a year in China. And I think, you know, Tesla will strain to deliver 200,000 Model 3s a year, which is way lower than a lot of analysts are estimating. Deutsche Bank had a note out recently, and it's forecasting 320,000 Model 3 deliveries this year and 450,000 next year. And I just think that is crazy. And, you know, all their financial forecasts are built on that model. And I think 2019 is a year when a lot of analysts have to say, well, that didn't happen, and now we need to change our forecast a little bit.
What do you think is going to make 2019 that year? Because you could make the same argument 3 years ago. I mean, if you go back and look at, you know, some of the shit that Morgan Stanley was putting out in 2015 and 2016 and some of the, you know, EPS estimates that they were baking in the cake for 2019 and 2020. I mean, you want to talk about far off, but that hasn't seemed to phase anybody's price target on this company in a meaningful fashion. So what do you think is going to make 2019 the year where kind of reality hits the sell side?
Yeah, well, it may not. You know, it hasn't yet. Why should it now, right?
Right. Well, that's my point.
I mean, listen, last night I was at a really interesting financial gathering, and part of at the very end of it, there was a little discussion, a two-person discussion, and one of the people involved in the discussion was the guy who is the president of BlackRock, which, you know, runs trillions of dollars of money that people have in their ETFs and have no idea what's in there.
Correct.
And he, first of all, he's such a gassy windbag. And it was really unimpressive, especially after how impressive the other people were at this event. But he said, you know, and I believe in Tesla. I think it was the only company that was actually mentioned by name. I believe in Tesla because Tesla is not a car company. It's a battery company. And they are going to disrupt the market with autonomous driving. So, A, Tesla is not a battery company. Panasonic's the battery company.
Right.
Tesla takes the cells, the cylindrical cells that nobody else wants because they want pouch architecture now, and assembles them into battery packs. But no, Tesla doesn't make the battery cells. And Tesla is way behind in autonomous driving. It's not about to disrupt the world. It's about to be disrupted with class action lawsuits. So, but yet this guy, the president of BlackRock, stood up and told 200, you know, sophisticated, perhaps, investors this tall tale. And so when the president of BlackRock is such an idiot that he hasn't researched the company any better than that and is up there pumping it, who knows when it ends, right?
That's, but I think what, that's a very go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, I mean, right. So there, he's the, you would expect him to be better educated, right, than that, wouldn't you? Especially since it's the only company he mentioned by name?
Well, I don't, because I've seen enough fuckery on Wall Street and enough morons on television to not expect any intelligence from anybody. However, when you say to the layperson that this is the CEO of a company that has $1 trillion under management, they might expect the person to have a modicum of intelligence.
Yeah, it really amazed me. I almost wanted to like stand up and say, "Excuse me, sir, you have a misapprehension about Tesla being a battery company, and you're certainly dead wrong about it being ahead in autonomous driving. And how is it that you can stand here and tell all these investors that what they ought to do is entrust their hard-earned money with someone who said that he had funding secured at $420 with the only contingency shareholder approval, when that was an out-and-out lie, complete, total, fraudulent lie? The only good excuse I can think of for it was that he was drug-addled at the time. And here you are encouraging people to invest with someone with that level of integrity? It shocked me. So, you know, the story can go on. There are idiots, and they're all over the place, and they're in high places. But that said, you know, I think Tesla's going to have to confront the fact that suddenly deliveries shrink. You know, if you take the Q4 delivery number and annualize it, it's more than 360,000 a year. When Tesla comes in closer to 300,000, if it sells 200,000 Model 3s and 100,000 Model S and X, and I doubt it will even get to that, that's a problem. That's a company that's shrinking, not growing. And if it can't match its Q3 GAAP profit consistently, I mean, it should be increasing it, right? And if it can't do that, then maybe people will say, you know, actually, maybe the company's worth a little bit less than I thought it was. I think that's one of the great dangers Tesla faces, is people start valuing it like an auto company.
And I know, just speaking on the topic of kind of reality hitting, and I know you were adamant about not wanting to cover anything that I covered with Mark Spiegel a couple of days ago, because you wanted to give people new content and not rehash things. But I do have to ask you, one of the things that we talked about was the Boring Company tunnel reveal. And, you know, it's my contention that one or two more of those type of public, where he is really scrutinized and railed upon by the media. I mean, even people that aren't involved in Tesla, that are not fascinated by SpaceX, that know only a tiny bit of the story, even those people were able to understand why that tunnel reveal was such a ridiculous undertaking. It's my contention that if there's one or two more of those, it may really start to seep through the soil of the mainstream that this guy is not all he's cooked up to be. And I don't want to, again, I know you don't want to repeat what we talked about, but I would love your thoughts on that.
Well, my theory is, has been, that the Boring Company is Elon Musk's demonstration to Wall Street that his believers and investors are so gullible, they'll believe anything. And the Boring Company is his proof of that. And, you know, I'm not sure that he's lost that many. A lot of him were defending it after that. Governor Andrew Cuomo of New York doesn't want to shut down the L subway line because it would create disruption here, though the experts say you need to shut it down for a year or so to do the repairs that are necessary. Instead, he said, well, we'll come up with a new technique, and I'm going to call Elon Musk for help. And he did this after that demonstration in Hawthorne, which was, I mean, embarrassing. There's a guy named Thunderfoot who does these fantastic takedowns of Elon Musk, and his takedown of the tunnel was just hilarious. He has a YouTube channel, Thunderfoot, with two zeros instead of two O's in the foot. And there was another fellow who wrote a great blog post saying, you know, here's the thing about Elon Musk. He sounds so impressive, except when he's talking about a field that you happen to know something about. And then
right.
you say, wow, the guy is full of it. And then you talk to somebody else in another field that Elon Musk has addressed where you thought Musk knew what he was talking about. And they say, no, when it comes right. to my area, the guy is absolutely full of it. Elon Musk is full of it from A to Z. And, you know, he invents, he fabricates, and he does it without any qualm. He's a special character.
Yeah, it's funny.
Who would have the guts to say, I've got funding secured at 420 when you didn't? I mean, and you expose your company to now, you know, massive lawsuits.
Well,
by the way, they will get interesting this year. I mean, look at some of the dangers Tesla has. It has the funding secured lawsuits.
Hold on, real quick before you go into legal liabilities,
yeah.
and not to beat a horse that's been dead for a year now, but you know, I've said that the funding secured thing, you know, to me confirmed two suspicions that I had. One is that I don't really think that he genuinely understands what running a public company is supposed to be like and what his obligations are as a C-level executive I don't think he gets it at all. That's number one. Number two, it is arguably to fake a buyout bid for a public company is if you sat down and you tried to think of a more egregious way to violate securities laws, I'm not sure that you could come up with one than that. Right? I mean, that's arguably the worst thing that a CEO could do, right? Just lie. I mean, aside from siphoning hundreds of millions of dollars from the company in cash and just pocketing it, like, what worse of an idea can you have than just faking that a company is going to get bought out for the sole purpose of manipulating the stock price?
It's breathtaking. Imagine Martha Stewart spent time in prison for far, far, far less than that. It's just breathtaking. And then, you know, of course, the SEC sued him, and he gave them the finger, and he said to the Tesla board, you better support me. And, of course, they issued a statement of support immediately, though we never saw an 8K for it. Then the stock tanks, and he comes crawling back on his knees, and he signs a consent judgment, which says, by the way, I can never deny that I committed the fraud that you've alleged here. And the SEC, you know, said, look, it's time for some new governance. We need some independent directors, and we need somebody who's got some securities law background to review the things that you put out on Twitter and other social media. So that was a real chance for Tesla to finally have some grown-up corporate governance. And I thought, you know, maybe this will change the company.
Right.
What does he do? He says, well, Robin Denholm's the chair of the company now. And by the way, I handpicked her. She's my pick. So much for the independent chair. And by the way, if she does anything I don't like, hell, the shareholders will all vote with me. So that's, you know, I'm in control of that situation. And then he appoints Larry Ellison, who is a close friend of his and a major investor in Tesla, as an independent director. That's not an independent director, okay? It's basically saying to the SEC, you guys are jokers. So the only hope, there's two hopes. One is that Kathleen Wilson Thompson, I think that's her name, has some moxie and stands up and tries to understand what's happened at this company. There's no indication that she has any recent extensive, sophisticated experience in corporate finance, but who knows? Let's hope so. And then they have their new general counsel, who really is a litigation specialist from a really prestigious litigation law firm, Williams & Connolly. Maybe he'll be the grown-up here, though, again, my experience is that commercial litigation lawyers and criminal litigation lawyers, he's a white-collar criminal lawyer to a large extent, too, I think, they're not experts in corporate finance. For him to dig in and really figure out what's going on at this company is a lot. But he still has one foot at his old law firm, which is odd too.
Yeah, that is strange. I mean, you have 3 decades of experience as an attorney. So what does that pick of that particular? First, I mean, explain what the difference is between picking someone as a general counsel who maybe has experience being a general counsel elsewhere versus picking somebody like you're saying who's a litigator and has experience in litigation. Kind of explain what that means to people that don't know, and then give me what your feel was on that pick.
Well, you know, it's okay. So it's unusual to have general counsel of a company be a seasoned litigator as opposed to a corporate securities lawyer.
Right.
Because the typical work of the general counsel is corporate securities, finance, et cetera. And they farm out the litigation to outside firms. And they may have an associate general counsel to do that. In Tesla's case, I thought, you know, it was actually sensible for them to bring on Butzwinkus, I think his name is. One, he's obviously a capable and experienced litigation attorney. And Tesla faces a deluge of litigation, and it needs somebody to act as the quarterback and coordinate all of it, because it's going to risk taking a position in one case that comes back to bite it in the next case.
Right.
When you consider it's got all these class actions arising out of funding secured, it's got the fraud from the alleged fraud of the SolarCity bailout. It's got endless Lemon lawsuits, more every day.
The Model 3 production lawsuit.
It has some lawsuits already, I think, for the autonomous driving claims, with more to come, probably. It's got the defamation lawsuit that's, you know, against Elon Musk, but a distraction and also a potential danger if he takes positions there that are inconsistent with what's going on in the other stuff. It's got the SEC investigations. As far as we know, those continue. It's got a DOJ investigation that continues. So to have a general counsel who's a litigation expert here is probably a good thing. So I thought it was a good move. What I'm not sure about is he the so-called Twitter sitter that the SEC required, the person who will advise the independent committee about the social media posts and other communications by Elon Musk and others at the company. There's never been an announcement that he's the guy, but on the other hand, Tesla never appointed anyone else. So I assume he's the guy.
It'll be interesting to see what his tenure at the company looks like, given that, and I read his bio, and obviously I'm not an attorney, so I don't have an extensive legal background, but it seems like he has a considerable amount of pedigree, and he his background, you know, I don't think he's going to go in there and not do what he's supposed to do as their general counsel.
Yeah, no, it'll be fascinating. My sense is he's a different breed of cat from Elon Musk
exactly.
or Larry Ellison. And so that dynamic will play out in the months to come. Interesting to watch.
It
can't save Tesla. When I say save it, it can't convert this company from being super overvalued. Nothing can save that except a diminution in the share price, because the company's hopelessly overvalued. But that's not Dale Butzwinkus' fault. That's not his problem. That's not his responsibility.
Well, I think it'll just be interesting because he's the first person for certain that is going to be at the company, or as close to for certain as you can get. You know, with his track record and being a litigator, you know, number one, he's going to be looking out for himself. Number two, you know, he's going to be looking out for the company and what will ultimately reflect back on his career. And, you know, I'm sure as an attorney, he is a far more conservative and far less, you know, it'll be very interesting to see what his personality dynamic and his professional dynamic looks like when it slams into the culture at the company as it exists now, which to me seems to be Elon's always right and just do whatever Elon wants. So, it could stir up some volatility there internally.
Yeah, and the fact that he still has one foot at the law firm means that his performance at Tesla and what happens now at Tesla bears on the reputation of Williams and Connolly as well. So, as you say, this will be a clash of cultures and fun to watch.
Let me ask you about the Azalea Banks subpoena that they're trying to get for one of these cases. For those that don't know, one of the cases that's being one of the lawsuits right now that's going through all the pretrial stuff has the plaintiffs. I think it's one of the class actions against the company is trying to for the funding secured tweet is trying to subpoena not only Musk's girlfriend at the time, Grimes, but also the house guest, who was this other musician, Azealia Banks. I guess ostensibly to try to figure out what the state of mind and what the immediate reaction was when all that shit went down. Supposedly they were all in the house at the same time. And it's the motion to, I guess, quash the subpoena or whatever it was that has been requested by the moving party, the people that are suing, set off Azealia Banks last week, and she posted all this shit on Twitter, which I don't know if you saw. If you did, I just wanted to get your 2 seconds worth of comment on that if you saw it.
Well, now we're into, you know, the reality TV aspect of Tesla. Where we thought it would get here.
You can be brief. I'm sorry.
I mean, this is why they need Dane Buswinkas coordinating all this stuff, because if what's their story? If their story is, well, Elon Musk misunderstood what this funding secured meant. There was confusion at the time, or perhaps he was not thinking clearly because he was overtired. Then the testimony of people who were eyewitnesses there and heard him discussing all this while it was going down could be relevant, okay? So he better be careful about what story he picks here, because if it turns out the testimony of his girlfriend, Grimes, I think her name is, or Azealia Banks, the musician, if those are relevant, they have interesting stories to tell. And
right.
apparently their friendship is not so close as it formerly was. And, you know, but we're kind of getting into People magazine.
Yeah, that's a nice 30 seconds on that. All right, listen, I want to ask you a couple of questions that some of my listeners submitted, if it's okay with you, before I let you go.
Sure.
Is that all right?
You can ask. I'm not sure I can answer.
Well, that's fine. If you can't answer, you can't answer. That's no problem, brother. All right. So one of my listeners wants to know if insiders can sell because we think whatever info held that up has been disclosed, and then in parentheses, the DOJ investigation, then why hasn't Tesla initiated an equity raise?
Yeah. Well, you know, a lot of people have wondered about that, and there are a lot of theories. I am personally very surprised. I had thought that they would raise equity, especially after the Q3 results.
Right.
My best guess, and people that I speak with who are knowledgeable about this, is that Tesla is in some hot water with the SEC, and it is going to be required to file something like a full-blown registration statement with
right.
very full disclosures, probably more detailed than it's made before, about exactly what its remaining Model 3 orders are, what the demand really looks like. They may have to answer some questions there about why, for example, the number of deliveries, it's at such a huge variance with the number of registrations. There are something like 30,000 more deliveries than there are registrations right,
right
now.
Right, yeah. Well, what is that? Somebody asked about that, too.
Yeah. Anyway, so my sense is that Tesla will need to file the kind of registration statement it would prefer not to file. And, of course, if you work at the SEC and you get to review and comment on it, Elon Musk may not be your favorite guy in the world right now. You know, he's not exactly doing everything to facilitate that process, is he? That's just what I think. I think they're going to need to do a full-blown registration statement if they want to raise capital again, because they're no longer the kind of issuer who's a seasoned issuer that can just go to market immediately.
Right, right.
They lost that status by misbehaving.
Right, exactly. Okay.
I think it's called a well-known seasoned issuer. But anyway, that's just my guess.
Got it. Excellent. And that makes, to me, that makes sense, too. All right. So another question. I actually got one from the same question from two people, rather, asking about the convertible bonds. One asks, will the bonds be converted to shares at a price lower than $360 in March? And if so, what are the ramifications? Somebody else asked that. I've heard that Tesla or anyone can change the convertible price to whatever. Is that true? If so, how common and what would it mean?
Yeah. And let me say, I'm not the bond indentures here are complicated, and
they sure are.
Here's what I think. I think let's assume the price stays below 360. I think it has to be above 360 for like a number of days,
right,
within a certain period for the convertibility to bite. So let's say the price is $360 or lower. My expectation is that Tesla will try to negotiate with the bondholders and try to get them to take some cash, and it may try to negotiate with them and get them to take stock too. And if they take stock, they'll take stock probably at a lower price than the current trading price, because
right,
they'll want to be able to unload it. And that's, you know, there's a downside to Tesla doing that. The best thing for Tesla to do would just be to pay the cash if it has cash. But if it's short of cash, it may be tempted to try to negotiate and work some deals out. My guess is that these bondholders are fully hedged already against
right,
share price moves. So if they take shares, they'll do it with hedges in place. And
if the company has to issue shares from Treasury for what you're, you know, if they were to negotiate with the bondholders and then they subsequently had to issue shares from Treasury, isn't that a situation also where they would have to make similar disclosure as if they were making an equity raise, though?
I don't know. Those would be private. That's a good question. I don't know the answer.
All right. Well, that's all right. We don't expect you to know everything. We know you. We know you know 99% of things, so that's good. We'll let you slide on that. All right.
9%.
Listen, I have one more question for you, because I know we're on a schedule and I don't want to hold you. And I'm very appreciative that you came back on. Tell the listeners kind of what you think the story is going to be for this company in the next, you know, maybe the next quarter or two quarters, and what are some of the dangers that they face, and what are some of the opportunities that they have?
Yeah. Well, I mean, we've talked about the dangers already. They have lots of litigation that they need to ward off. There is always, and there are not just the litigation affecting the company directly, but there's the Elon Musk drama of the defamation lawsuit, the Boring Company distraction, the Grimes and Banks sideshows, which are fascinating. And they're a little dangerous because I think Azealia Banks is of the view that Elon Musk is maybe more of a drug user than he has allowed in his interviews.
Right.
And that could be a real problem for example, for SpaceX. NASA might take a dim view of that. There is the big danger that the company will actually be valued like an auto company. There is the danger that if the share price falls into the 200s, which is still stratospherically overvalued, Elon Musk will face a margin call, and that could really lead to catastrophic consequences, because the company has really allowed him to imperil the company by margining so much of his stock. That's a real problem that is forgotten about sometimes, but it's real. The opportunities are, you know, if I think Tesla is going to have a profitable Q4. In fact, since it had, close to 9% more deliveries in Q4, it should have 9% more GAAP profit, right? So $340 million GAAP profit in Q4, either that or it's an epic fail. But that stops in 2019. The revenues are going to drop. The profits are going to drop or go negative. The earnings will go negative. And Tesla's going to have to tell this story that, hey, deliveries really don't equal demand. Just you wait. And by the way, look over here at this beautiful Model Y. You're going to love this car. And look, in Shanghai, the Chinese people are just crazy about Elon Musk. They can't get enough of him. And the Chinese Communist Party officials are totally locked up with us, and we're going to have this beautiful factory here in China, and don't worry about the fact that we'll be competing with a massive Chinese EV market that includes, you know, partnerships that other big auto companies have with indigenous Chinese companies, plus just companies that are pure Chinese. We'll somehow find a way to sell our cars and make a profit over here, even though, of course, our Chinese financiers get the first cut. So it's a hard story to tell, but Elon Musk is, if nothing else, the great storyteller of our time, the great corporate storyteller of our time.
Yeah, and they're saying that Shanghai factory is going to crank out 500,000 vehicles once it reaches production volume, and they're saying it's going to start production the second half of this year, but They don't have anything built.
Yeah. Well, you should, you know, just like you should have zero doubt that Tesla will be making 10,000 Model 3 cars a week by the end of 2018, you should have zero doubt that this Chinese factory is going to get built just when promised and turn out all the cars promised and have all the wonderful things happen.
Yeah, well, that didn't stop him. I think he was in China just a couple of days ago, right?
Yeah.
Doing
he can always peddle his stock to that idiot, Rob Capito at BlackRock, right, that I talked about? I mean, if there's people that stupid, Robert Capito, then go ahead and get BlackRock to take it and foist it off on their poor, unknowing investors who have 401ks or whatever they're doing.
And thus is the reason why I like doing this podcast, because the everyday person owns that ETF that this garbage is going to get tucked into. And if it's not Tesla, it's another company. And people just, you know, they just don't know. You got to make me a promise. And that is, when the Tesla thing is all said and done, whenever it is, whether it's next month or whether it's 10 years from now, that you still come back on the podcast and you still talk to me about the crazy world that we live in.
Hey, if I'm wrong about Tesla, I'll come back and tell you how wrong I was too.
Oh well, yeah, we'll talk about it together. I have no problem admitting being wrong, you know. But I'm just saying,
listen,
when the Tesla story's beat to death, you gotta just come on and provide a rational, sound, common sense filled discussion about whatever's going on in the world. Also, once in a while,
we'll see. Maybe WeWork will be public by then, and I have something else to talk about.
All right. Well, listen, Montana
right,
Skeptic,
Chris.
It was my pleasure, as it always is.
Enjoy talking to you.
All
Take
right.
Care.
Appreciate it. Bye. That was the one, the only, the Montana Skeptic, calling live from an underground bunker out in Montana. I don't know where that dude is, but it doesn't matter. He is clearly, I know maybe again he would object to it, but clearly, I guess, heading to legendary status when it comes to being a Tesla short. And I guess we have Elon Musk to thank for that. But I do want to thank him for coming back on. And one more time, I just want to take this opportunity to thank just a couple more of my patrons that make the podcast possible. And guys like Chris Schaefer, I appreciate you very much. Kenneth Sproul, Kristen Strand. Let's see, my friend, who haven't I shouted out in a while? How about my brother Mark Wooler? What's going on? And Matt Crum. I don't even think I've ever shouted you out. Matt Kiefer. What's going on, my brother? I appreciate you, too. Michael J., Michael Kantowski, thank you guys so much for continuing to be patrons. And I appreciate you guys listening. But for now, I got jiu-jitsu in 1 hour, and I am out. Peace!